Hello there, sisters and brothers. Welcome to the season two premiere of That Conversation. It's a podcast for your ears. How are you all doing today? It's been a while, hasn't it? I hope you haven't forgotten about me. I haven't forgotten about you, even though things have just been crazy lately. I'm as busy as I have been in a long time. Still teaching at that historically black college that will remain nameless. Still teaching classes, Project Aristotle at the Alban, directing a play at the Alban, which is premiering later this month. And as I alluded to previously in the episode 12 season finale as a cliffhanger, I left you with me saying that I have been doing stand-up comedy on a pretty regular basis at very many different venues all over the area. And I'm hooked. And I really wish that I wasn't, because it kind of sucks to be hooked to this. I really want there to be something else going on, but this is the thing that I got kind of wrapped into. This was very concurrent. We had a couple months ago, I had this confluence of events that has kind of led me into looking at this as something that I do as a massive part of my identity. One is that the thing that I thought I was going to be doing with the rest of my life didn't happen. Another is that it turns out that I'm actually quite good at doing stand-up comedy. I mean, I want to be perfectly clear. I don't think I'm the shit. I don't think that. And anyone that thinks I'm getting too big for my britches needs to realize that I've only done this 10 times at this point, but I'm having fun doing it. I enjoy making people laugh, and I'm going to maybe stick a little bit of one of my sets on here at the end so you can just get a feel for what it's like to be in one of these sets. But I'm just starting. Today's guest is an old friend of the podcast. You'll remember him from episode 2. It's David Smith. David has a new film out. It's called Ladybeard. It is going to be premiering Friday, April 12th at the Keith Albee Theater as part of the Appalachian Film Festival. I'm in it for about 5 seconds. I don't have any dialogue because they cut my dialogue out, because David does that, because he does that. But I had a really great time talking to him last month when we were in Huntington. And you'll notice it's a looser format than we usually do, if that's possible. I'm experimenting with trying just a little bit of a looser thing every once in a while. Tell me how you feel about it. But that's something that's going on here. You know, I feel like it's a really good film, and I'm glad that I got to talk to him about it. It's a thing, you know, and I guess there's been a lot of talk about equality lately because of the gay marriage thing and all the equal signs on Facebook. I didn't know what was going on at first, and so I thought that my screen was sideways, that all the avatars on Facebook had got turned sideways, and that it was 9/11 again. But no, evidently it's because people believe that gay marriage and straight marriage should be treated equally, which is something that I believe. But here's why I didn't do that. I'm not an equal sign. I'm not an equal sign, folks. I'm a person, a human being. And if you can't tell by my actions how I feel about gay marriage and that I think everyone should be equal, then I've done something wrong as a human being. I don't like being bullied into behavior, even if it's the right behavior. Even if it's so clearly the right behavior that there is nothing else in the world that I could do that would be better. I have no justifiable reason to not want to do this simple gesture to show everyone that I'm for gay marriage, other than the fact that it's not going to change the case for the people on the Supreme Court? How is me changing my Facebook image going to affect what John Roberts, Supreme Court Justice John Roberts, is going to think about gay marriage? He's not my Facebook friend. It's not going to affect me. Stop bullying me. I don't like doing the right thing for a lot of reasons. Just even if it's the right reason. Or in the few cases that I do the right thing, it's completely out of spite. Like, for example, a couple weeks ago I was at the transit mall and there's this mentally disturbed individual that comes up to me, shaking. He's as scared of me as I am of him. They say that about snakes and the mentally ill. And I felt bad for him, but he's like, I'm okay, you're okay. And then he starts walking away. And then he comes up to another woman that's walking by and asks her for money. And she says, no, man, you're old enough to be my dad. I don't give my money to anyone. And I just felt so bad for him. And I decided I did something that I never do, is I pulled out a $5 bill and gave it to the man. Maybe it was because I felt some twinge of humanity. I think it was just because of two things. One, petty spitefulness, because I wanted to spite this woman, this horrible woman who had said this horrible thing to this poor defenseless man. And two, because he said the most perfect phrase that I think I've ever seen after she walked by. He yelled, "Fuck the pig! Fuck the pig!" And you know what? We need more people yelling that, because things are messed up right now. Things are so messed up right now in our country. We have the fact that people's guns have more rights than people's children.
Morning.
We've got so many problems. We are on the verge of financial collapse because we can't get our congressmen to come together on something. Fuck the pigs! Fuck the pigs! You're absolutely right. And so, no, I'm not going to tell you who to vote for or what to do, but I did give that guy $5 because he said, fuck the pigs. So, do with that what you will. I'm going to go ahead and hand it over to my conversation with David Smith.
Talk and I'll see how I feel about levels here. Keep talking. I want to hear it.
I'm going to keep talking. I'm going to talk so much. My dog is wet outside, so we can't go right now. Plus, I'm going to do this podcast interview. We will go eventually, though, even if it is wet outside.
Okay.
We'll put on your coat, put on your tiny dog hood, and we'll take us a journey. I can't say the word because I know you don't understand the words.
The words? Right. Yeah. So I'm going to move this a little closer to you because we may hear this. Oh, wouldn't it be ironic if the only time that I couldn't hear your voice is the time I'm trying to record you? Yeah, we had a little bit of a Watergate moment earlier in the car. I'm here once again with, David Smith, famous for, Someone Is Raping Godzilla and,
Oh my god, that's how we're going to start this interview. I'll have you know, I have on my next actions list to delete that movie from the internet. I do not feel... I think I talked about that on the first interview, that I'm not proud of that movie. I mean, I'm proud of the movie. I think the movie looks good.
Yeah.
I think the performances are good. But I am not a fan of the fact that one of the movies I made is a silly movie...
With the
about rape,
yeah,
yeah. It's not. I'm not proud, but I don't want to like whitewash history. I made it.
Rape happens every day. It's a very serious issue, even in the lizard community. But
I'm going to delete that movie.
Yeah, I invited David on so we could essentially have the same conversation that we had in season one, except this time with a little more caffeine.
That's right. I am awake this time.
No,
I was very tired and very.
I got an email about 4 months ago from David saying, "Patrick, there's something I just got to get off my chest that I've been I've been looking for the right venue, and it's just something about myself that I've needed to say. And I said, yeah, David, what is it? He said, well, they're just things about me. And I was like, come on, you're going to have to say it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to just, so,
I'm a chocoholic.
You know what? I still love you, man.
All right. It's hard for me to say that word, you know?
Chocoholic, yeah.
Yeah,
I know. any reason you decided you wanted to come out as a chocoholic right now?
Well, I thought, you know, your podcast, you've had, like, some, you know, you need some ratings. So, I figured,
hey, I've
got to boost those numbers.
I'll have you know we're at 34 right now.
Well, hopefully we'll get to 35.
Oh, 35. I think that we can do that. No, actually, since David spoke with me back in April, is that right? It seems
was
like...
Was it that long ago?
Let's see. Because it was maybe it was May or June. It was the same week that I talked with Rudy, which was before Michael moved in, but after... Oh, this is going to be really entertaining for
me. It is, yeah.
I can...
It all blends together. I've spent the past year, like, pretty much editing the movie.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Yeah,
since we last talked...
we can talk about more than my old shitty high school movies. So good. The people in them were good. I was learning... But, still, we talked about my early stuff, and I'm going to turn 25 this month, so I'm hoping that the stuff I'm working on now is my early stuff.
You know? Yeah, you know what, that's a good point. You don't want to peak too early.
Right.
Which is something I told Toby after watching the pilot of Lords of Fun, to which he...
Do we want to say on the interview? I'm kind of your Al Roker today.
I kind of
guest.
Yes, yeah. My
anytime
Toby,
on COVID, like when you saw
the
Al
reason
Roker,
that Dave, the reason that I had David back, other than the fact that I really wanted another shot at this, because David and I were both pretty. You and I were very, very tired that day.
I was tired of that day, and also that I'm much more confident now than I was then. I talk about that. If you read my Facebook, you see I'm always. Always talking about that.
The big developments in your life, as far as I can tell, are you've got your confidence back.
Yeah, back. I don't think I've ever had it.
So you've got the confidence now.
We'll see how long it lasts.
Yeah, you're no longer affiliated. You know, you've been aided of your responsibilities from. Your charitable work with the West Virginia Filmmakers Guild.
That's right. I can talk shit about everybody now.
Let's start with Bob Gates.
No, oh, Patrick.
May God rest his soul. Very, very, very sweet man. I don't mean that. He was one of the sweetest men. When everybody else told me to eat the habanero pepper, he said don't do it. And he was damned if he was the one that was right.
I did not get to meet Bob very much. I met him at one meeting while I was president. But yeah, he seemed like an awesome guy.
I was talking about this with Fessemeyer.
Yeah.
There's a picture of him and Thomas David Franklin that I've been trying to hunt down.
Oh, yeah.
Of him passing the torch. Uh-huh. Well, so that happened. You're no longer in that situation.
Right.
You edited Lady Beard in It's about to premiere in festivals.
Hopefully.
I really wanted to start with talking about pizza sliders. Because that seems to be the biggest...
Oh boy, we're going to go there.
We're going to...
The pizza sliders, they're good. I've been posting. I've only posted about them the past week because they've only been out a week.
Yeah,
I don't know when this is going to drop, but at the time that we're recording it, pizza sliders from Pizza Hut have been out for a week. It's hard to imagine a time when there were not pizza sliders, though. They're like a tiny pizza that you can a tiny Pizza Hut pizza that you can fit in the palm of your hand.
I tell you what, I pick on you because I can't eat them. Right. But man, if they had gluten-free pizza sliders...
This is the Rudy interview all over again now.
Actually, while you're doing that, I'm going to listen to playback to see if I can hear anything. Where were we before David just got a call back from the MacArthur Genius Foundation?
Mm-hmm.
He's been he's been awarded a free subscription to Red Bulletin, the Red Bull magazine.
I'm not good at improv.
I'm not either. Well, yeah, as you can tell, I'm not either.
But
I mean, I'm.
Oh, I can think there, but I mean, I know I can't. You can't say no, so I can't say well, no. I wasn't. But my only thought, well, I can't think of anything funny. I just think I'm real excited to read that Red Bull magazine.
You know, I actually get the Red Bull magazine.
Because that is really...
I got it through... This is ridiculous. I got it because I had a high clout score. And so Red Bull recognized me as a potential tastemaker. So they started sending me...
I think Chase has told me that he's gotten free clout stuff.
I don't get a lot. I've gotten some stuff in the past. Axe kept sending me deodorant.
The thing just seems like the most stupid thing ever on the internet. And that's saying something. I'm saying the stupidest thing on the internet.
Yeah, well...
And of all the stupid things on the internet, clout seems like...
Here's how stupid it is. I'm only 2 clout points behind Television Without Pity. So, and
I don't know. I try to do it for all, every once in a while. It's like, Jason Brown gave you clout in movies.
Of course he.
Someone gives me clout in pole dancing.
That would have been me.
Is that you?
That would have been me.
Okay.
I got an angry tweet from Jesse Thorne once for giving him, clout in ironic racism. I'm sorry, National Public Radio host, Jesse.
Right.
They just, because he moved to the mothership.
Yeah.
But I don't even remember what we were talking about.
Pizza sliders. I've had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 pizza sliders so far. So really, that's not that much in the grand scheme of things. My birthday party later on this month, I'm planning to just... Well, I probably can't have as many pizza sliders as I'd like to. I'd like to just fill entire apartment with pizza sliders. Like,
yeah. So
everywhere you can't step anywhere without almost stepping in a pizza slider.
So yeah, I think pizza sliders everywhere. It would be like the episode of Dick Van Dyke with the oranges. Do you know? Are you familiar
with
this?
Of Dick Van? No, I'm not familiar.
It's the second. It's one of the most famous episodes. It was like
the episode of Dick Van Dyke where there are oranges everywhere.
Yes, he opens like the door and this endless mountain. It's one of these bizarre, strange, surreal moments.
No!
Yes, no!
It's not!
No, this is the thing!
If this was a thing, I would have heard about it. The fact that this, you were saying...
I'm gonna look it up on YouTube right now.
I hope you do, because if this exists, then, like, the world I live in now is a much different world than the world I lived in yesterday. If there's an episode of the Dick Van Dyke Show where he opens a door and a mountain of oranges...
So I have number one, I have a master's degree in watching television. So, fuck
and you.
You
minored in that orange episode of the Dick Van Dyke Show.
No, but I did go to a grad school whose mascot was an orange.
So they were big into that episode.
They were big into that episode. How could you have never heard of this? This is like one of... I was surprised that they didn't talk about this on the Reiner episode of Marin. This is like one of the most famous episodes of television ever. If you can't tell if I'm bullshitting you or not.
I hope you are, because if this is something I don't, because if this is true, I will be glad, because I'm glad that there are new things to learn about in the world every day.
And most of them, I had a revelation involving Dick Van Dyke.
Did you?
Yeah, because I mistaked it. I mistake someone.
Mistook it, Patrick.
Mistook someone. Mistook Dick Van Dyke for my friend Marcus. But this may never air. But I'm having too much fun.
We'll just air the audio of the episode of Dick Van Dyke with the oranges.
That's what I'd
be very happy to hear that.
Okay.
Chase is gonna love this. Oh, so you did another interview with Patrick. Instead of talking about Ladybeard, you talked about the episode of Dick Van Dyke, where he opens a door and a mountain of oranges fall on him.
Let's see here.
You know, Dyke oranges. Show me what results you have for that, Google. Orange Dykes. What? Google image search.
Well, it's not on YouTube because of copyright stuff.
Right, that's why it's not on YouTube.
Okay.
Not the fact that it's an implanted memory.
I have seen this episode. I think it's the last season. Let me pull it up.
Yeah.
It's
on Netflix now, isn't it? Or Hulu. Yeah. I think it just went on it because there's like commercials for it on Hulu. Not the orange episode.
I'm not going to be able to tell just based on this.
This is just a dream you had.
Let's see here. I'm not on Google, that's why. Let's see. I'm trying a little bit of a looser format.
You don't edit this, right?
No. This is dead air.
Yeah.
I think I have to admit, with doing this more improv stuff, I'm no Dwight Slapp. But we'll see here. Let me try one more time here.
I still haven't listened to their podcast. Like, what? How do you pronounce it? If not Dwight Slapp,
it's Dwight Slappy.
Slappy?
I think it's Dwight Slappy.
Slappy?
Yes. See what?
It doesn't look like that. It needs a Y at the end for it to be that.
Mm.
Or like an accent mark. You can't just say, oh, my name, like I can't, you know, people look at my name, David Smith. And no, it's David.
It's Frankenstein.
Even though there's no E at the end of David, that's just what the name is. What can I tell you?
Let's see here. Okay, I was wrong. It's walnuts.
That makes more sense.
Yeah. It's not oranges. And you know why it wouldn't have been oranges? The show was in black and white.
Da 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 da.
It was walnuts. I knew I would find it. The episode was called It May Look Like a Walnut.
The reason they couldn't use oranges is because it was shot in black and white. So they thought about using oranges, but they thought, you know what, the audience at home is going to think these are just a bunch of balls. They won't understand until we come up with color television that these are oranges.
You know what? Let's get through the Ladybeard stuff and then come back to the oranges.
And then we'll come back to the episode of Dick Van Dyke where he opened a closet and a bunch of walnuts fell out.
It's a really weird... I'll tell you what's bizarre.
Is that the only thing that happens in the episode? He opens it and just... He's buried there for 30
No, minutes. But this gag goes on for like a good 5 minutes.
That sounds amazing.
It is a really amazing episode. And I'll tell you what else is weird. Have you seen the finale of Dick Van Dyke?
No.
It has nothing to do with the rest of the series.
It turns out he's always been buried under those walnuts, and the rest of the series was just a dream.
No, it's a fantasy where he is like a Gene Autry singing cowboy type cowboy in some old western town. And it's like a fantasy shoot 'em up where he's a cowboy. You need to watch more Dick Van Dyke.
I know.
It's my favorite... He's my favorite Van Dyke.
Yeah? I'm a big fan. I like Jerry Van Dyke.
Remember, he's really good.
He was on like every TGIF show. We talked about this last time. I love for TGIF. We didn't talk about Jerry Van Dyke being on every TV show, though, on TGIF.
Oh, boy. Yeah, Jerry was coach, though.
That wasn't even TGIF. He was
Wednesday night, wasn't it?
He was on like every ABC show because he was on Coach and he was on You Wish and he was on Teen Angel.
Oh my god, I forgot about You Wish and Teen Angel.
We talked about it on the last episode.
Do you remember Odd Man Out?
All Roads. No, but I believe we talked about it on the last episode.
Boy, this second interview was a great idea.
It was.
Oh.
All roads lead back to TGIF.
But the thing about TGIF was that it was a family-friendly thing that focused on real teen problems.
Yeah.
Kind of like Ladybeard.
Yes.
Let's talk about Ladybeard for Chase.
Let's talk about Ladybeard for Chase. And for all you 3, 4, or 5 listeners.
David's a filmmaker who's been making stuff for about 5 or 6 years, some of which is good and then some of which is someone is raping Godzilla. And he sent me the script before he finished Ladybeard. And I just love the script.
Thank you. I've
told you this. I used the script in one of my acting classes. So I had a bunch of 12-year-olds doing this really complex, socially complex dinner scene where you have a lesbian, two lesbians fighting about equality and being interrupted by one of the lesbians' former lovers who was just experimenting in high school. And it was great because that's kind of how I remember it.
You're adding a little backstory there. I had not. That's never stated.
It's implicit.
But I'm glad that you thought enough about the. I didn't think that about that character, but that's interesting to me that you went there.
Yeah, and I liked it. Aaron Deegan was in it, and an Iovol. Who's played the waitress who was in Escribition.
Yeah.
Who's a stunning beauty. Just a really stunning beauty, and camera loves her, and very great actress. And then there's this great line in that scene that makes me laugh every time, is everybody loves Hot Pockets.
Yeah.
And so you're able...
There's some noise going.
Motherfucker! Okay.
You have to take that?
No, okay. Last call was not in my phone book. Who is last call that was not in my phone book? 776, 629.
They're going to love you reading their phone number on your podcast.
And for some reason they left their social security number on. We're waiting to talk to Vince Neil of Motley Crue. I'm actually going to take it now that you've brought it up.
Okay. We've got Tiny Dog sitting here, too. Podcast audience. Tiny Dog's not very talkative. Which is probably good, because that would disturb the neighbors. But still, I know it's hard for you to believe that Tiny Dog is here. Podcast audience, but please be aware that Tiny Dog is here. All right.
Oh, it was you.
Oh.
So I interrupted talking to you to listen to a voicemail from you.
It's very meta.
Oh, let's talk about meta.
Aaron Deegan was also in that. Talking about you being attracted to Aaron Deegan.
One of my friends used to say, oh, Patrick, you just want there to be another Aaron Felton. That's what it is, because my sister's also named Aaron. I just have a healthy admiration for her, you know.
She's really good. I mean, I thought she was awesome in Escribitionist. I know I'm biased because they're my movies, but it's hard for me to say I'm like proud of my writing or anything, but I really like the performance. I like the performances that are in the movies. Mm. Maybe it's partly because they're bringing the stuff that I wrote to life, but. I mean, I thought Greg and Aaron did a great job in that. I thought Aaron did a great job in Ladybeard. And I think she was kind of brought in a little bit later. We may have had someone else.
And it's a tiny part. I'd say maybe it's like maybe 2-3 minutes of screen time. It's not a big role, but it's a scene that pops because it's one of the hardest things to do in writing is to construct a good dinner scene that's engaging but also feels organic and not contrived.
I agree with that from having written them. I am very flattered to hear you say that I did it because I actually that scene itself was like that was a very hard scene to write. one of the hardest in it, and been hard to shoot because there's so many. I think there's more characters in that than there have been in any in that scene than there have been in any of the features that I in any of the scenes in the features I've written.
Yeah, you know what? You know what movie has a really great dinner scene that kind of reminded me of that one?
What?
Hannibal.
Oh yeah.
It's really, really great tension.
Yeah.
Draws stuff out there. And, you know, I mean, when you talk about the talent on hand in that scene, you're not pulling anyone's leg. It's a really good talent base of people. Are these just all, are these professional actors or just?
Some, sort of, some are into acting. That's one of the things I was going to say. Erin's awesome in the movies. I want to keep casting her in stuff as long as she wants to be. But she's not an actress, you know. She, I think she still works. Well, I don't want to say where people work, but it's not an actress. She just kind of got involved because it was something fun to do. And so some of the people in the movies are like that. And it's awesome when we get someone like that who's also really good. But yeah, some people like, well, we were talking about Escribitionist, the other lead in that, the main lead, the Escribitionist himself, Greg, he is an actor. He does theater around here. I really like getting people who are actors and, you know, mixing them with people who are kind of maybe just doing this for fun and they have something else in their life.
Like, yeah.
I think that gets that yields an interesting mix.
Yeah.
Because I feel like if you get, and they, I don't know, I hope my actor friends don't listen to this and get mad, but I think maybe when you get too many...
Oh, come on, you know no one listens to this.
I think when you get maybe too many, like, actors, like theater actors, they can sort of gang up on you, and as a director who, as I said, I'm just starting to get confident, but I'm not usually very confident myself, you know, it's, you don't want to be, like, outnumbered. I don't know. Maybe that sounds too insecure, but it's nice to get.
Are you confident in directing actors? Is that something that you consider yourself one of your strengths?
I don't know. I'm getting better. I'll tell you what. Before Lady Beard, Escribitionist, I wrote it, I directed it, and I shot it. Like, it was all handheld, and I was the one holding the camera and directing. Lady Beard, we had Chase Henderson was the director of photography, and he really, as a photographer, he was really in charge of the visuals. Like, I had a shot list. By the way, that's one of the, you talked on the episode with Chase about how we didn't have a shot list. That's not, we had a shot list. Took a little bit of issue with that. I would spend, and we may have not had a shot list until the night before, but I still spent hours and would not sleep the night before to make sure that we had a shot list.
Yeah.
But anyway, I had the list of shots that we needed to make sure we edited. Chase was in charge of making sure those shots looked good. So because Chase was in charge of that, I could concentrate more on the actors. And I think, I mean, again, I'm hesitant to say I did it for sure, but I think just from the beginning of making Lady Beard until the end, I think I grew a lot with, you know, with learning how to relate to actors and everything.
Yeah. And a lot of, I think the key to working with actors is, I mean, there's so many different schools. The Woody Allen's famous, just let them do their job, hire the right people, let them do their job. But
I like that. I loved watching the Woody Allen documentary. I do think that there's, especially doing like independent movies and the kind of guerrilla filmmaking, you know, that I do. Everyone's different, you know. So a lot of time, you know, the Woody Allen movies, these are, you know, professional actors that are, you know, paid to do this. With me, it's a mix of people who are actors who eventually want to become professional actors, and people who just want to maybe hang out. So everyone's different, and you kind of have to learn how to respond to different people.
Which, the one that I've wondered, how do you do this without it being the most stressful thing ever, is directing your wife.
Uh-huh.
There's a scene in Lady Beard that when you're introduced to your wife's character, she's wearing a strap-on dildo.
Right.
With the most genial face of anyone I've ever seen with a strap-on dildo. Usually in cinema, when you see someone wearing a strap-on dildo,
right.
They mean business.
Yeah.
But there's just like this Cheshire Cat smile that when Alexis comes on screen and in that wearing the the giant dildo. And it was purple too.
Thanks for spoiling it, Patrick.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It's in one of the promo shots. I don't know.
Yeah.
Press get
that, yeah, I mean, it's your money shot, so you want to keep using it over
right,
and over.
Right, yeah. But as far as that, I got to give credit where it's due. I think that's there wasn't a whole lot of direction as far as, like, the facial expression or whatever in that scene. So I think that was on her. I will say that there was, you know, with my wife in the movie, with Molly...
did I do it again?
No, we didn't say that. The real name. Yeah, but with my wife, her character is very angry.
Shrill?
Very angry. That's what I'm getting at. She's angry. Some people probably will think she's shrill, but I don't want her to be that way. Like, when we did one of the first read-throughs, she didn't read the part in the read-through, but when I was just writing it, someone said afterwards, like, we're not supposed to like Hayden, right? And I did some rewrites afterwards. I hope I kind of
She's more
that.
Human.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want you, because I don't want you to dislike Hayden. So that's the thing.
There's not a save the cat moment with her, is there?
Right, I don't think so. I hope not, anyway. I don't know.
You start to like her as your main character begins to appreciate her.
Yeah, I think
is
so.
Is that you're given a window in.
Right.
And that's really fun, whenever you can pull that off. I watched a movie that's like that the same way, where you're not, that all the characters are shrill, but they kind of win you over recently. And it's
the movie?
It was called Sallow, 40 Days of Sodom. No, this was Silver Linings Playbook.
Okay. I want to say that the one of the reasons for casting my wife as Hayden is that character...
Now, if you're going to say my wife, you have to say, my wife!
My wife! No, we talked about this beforehand, is that, you know, because there's that inclination to view this character as the bad guy, and I did not want that, I needed to be able to direct that, you know, whoever was going to play that part, I needed to have a pretty strong connection with. So, and I hope it worked. I mean, I know everyone's going to view the movie differently, but... I needed to be able to direct her so that you could, hopefully, the intention is, even though she can be pretty angry, so that you'll still, you know, still like her. I think she did a good job. One of the directions I know I gave her, though, is to be, like, there's some scenes where she has to get really mad, and I told her just to, you know, just get mad, as mad as you can, and if you need to dial it down, I will tell you, but...
She's a very high-strung character.
Right.
Which is interesting because Alexis has such a low vibe.
Molly.
I, damn it.
I think it's fine.
Yeah.
It's not...
I don't have a large listenership in the particular place where that would be a bad thing.
Right. What were you saying there?
Yeah, she's so chill. And Hayden is so the opposite
right,
of chill.
Yeah.
Is that in the one scene I was an extra in it, and the one scene I was in with her, she was just
had to argue with her. Even in that scene though, that was where she was a little more subdued.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
It's an interesting thing because, and I've been, I don't know, I think about this a lot because artists are supposed to have the idea of the muse.
Uh-huh.
I kind of feel like looking at your stuff, you are your own muse in a way I feel like all of your films are about you, but they're about things that aren't you.
Yeah. Huh. I hadn't thought about it like that. I did. Yeah. I mean, all my movies are about me. I don't know how to make a movie that's not. I don't know that I want to make a movie that's not. I mean, that may sound narcissistic, but I am getting, I don't know what all we'll talk about or what all we'll have time to talk about, but I am moving into where I want to do more than just movies. I want to, like, try to help people and get outside myself in that way. But as far as making movies, I mean, that's, yeah, I'd love to make money from it, but that's my art. And so I feel like, even though I don't want my movies to just be, you know, like, narcissistic, it's always going to be, this is my viewpoint on something. This is my, you know, this is some subject through my lens, you know? That sounds pretentious as shit. But,
make your art.
You sure didn't see it there for a second.
Make art. Make art. Make art. Make art.
I see what you're saying.
Make art. Make art. No, it's, I get what you're, I think.
Well, Lady Beard, there's a lot, to me, there's a lot of different themes in it, but from the outset, it is, you know, going to like an open and affirming church like I go to, being involved with Rocky Horror, knowing a lot of people in the LGBT community, I really wanted to make a movie, you know, with LGBT themes and everything, but I am a heterosexual white male. It would be disingenuous for me to make a movie, I think, with a gay main character and for me to expect that I know what that's like. You know, I kind of, to make a movie about these LGBT themes and everything, I kind of, maybe I'm just saying this now, but I feel like I had to make a movie, again, it's through my viewpoint, you know?
I don't know that I could ever be that honest in the frame.
Yeah.
Because for me, that's the place that I would, when I'm writing stuff, that's kind of where I go to hide.
Really?
Yeah. And I didn't used to be that way. It's just, and I feel like it's interesting that, like, right after Lady Beard, you started, within the last couple months, you've started doing some stand-up. And that is a kind of an interesting component, too, because it's given you a chance where you are completely honest. You don't have the option to hide behind the characters, which are your ciphers. Right. Boy, that's terrifying.
It is. It's. I mean, I think the nuts and bolts, the actually doing it, is terrifying to me. It's when what I like about the hiding part of the movies that I like is actually just being able to. There's not a lot of pressure. I mean, there is pressure trying to get all the shots done, but still, if we don't get all the shots done on a certain day, we know we could go back and shoot it another day or something. What's different about stand-up is I actually have to get up there. I'm the one performing.
It's your ass on
the
line.
Yeah, yeah. When I'm making a movie, you know, the actor, when we show it, I still get nervous and feel like I have to throw up before we show the movie, but at least all I have to do is just sit there after we push play on the DVD player or something.
But isn't that more stressful because you have no control at that point?
No, I don't think it's more stressful. It's still stressful, but it's not more stressful than actually having to stand up and talk, because you can freeze like I did the last time I did stand up.
Nobody remembers that. Nobody was talking about that after the show. Trust me.
But in my head, I could think. But what was I going to say? Talking about stand up. Versus the, you know, yeah, I can hide when I'm making the movies.
Done stand-up, do you feel like you would go back and, now knowing what it feels like to do stand-up, if you'd known that before you wrote Lady Beard, if it would have been any different?
I think about that sometimes, because, well, I don't think we've said it here yet, but in Lady Beard, the main character is a stand-up. There's two sides to it. There's one side where, I mean, yeah, I feel like some stuff I probably would have written differently having experienced it, but there's not enough that I think would be different to where it's not like, now that I've done it, I look at the movie and I think, oh, I was wrong about this whole thing. I mean, I think, I don't know what would be. I'm sure there would be stuff that would be different, but, I mean, I don't feel like the movie is false now that I've done it.
This is a fun game.
Because I did try, actually, I mean, I did stand up once, you know, earlier in college. And the material that I did, some of that is the material that Andy, the main character, does in the movie. So it was kind of written from experience within that context.
Well, I mean, are there any other things in previous movies that with you feel like if I had it to do over again, here's how the story might be different now? If you were to remake, let's just start at the beginning there with Maneater. If you were to remake Maneater now, which is about a guy who has an obsessive relationship with a girl that becomes his girlfriend that results in him doing awful, awful things.
Yeah.
If you made that today, how would that be different?
You know, I think about that stuff sometimes. I think about remaking Maneater sometimes. I actually always, I'm going to spoil it, right? I don't think I'll ever do it, so I guess I'll spoil it. I think every year about making a parody trailer for, like, a fake Maneater remake that, like, the joke would be that, oh, guys, Lionsgate made this movie and I don't have any control over it. I've even thought to the point where I would cast Michael Gallimore, our friend Michael Gallimore, as the fake Glenn in the Lionsgate reboot. And it would all be, like, Twilight, all in that, like, blue, lens.
And everyone would have jet black hair. Extreme high contrast green toned thing.
Yeah.
And it's all in the woods.
As a joke. But, if I made Maneater now, I'm sure there would be tons of things different. I think a lot of things, there are things in Maneater that I cringe at just politically now, like, you know, the blind character and the deaf character in the beginning. I mean, it's just me being a dumb kid and making jokes that I don't feel as comfortable about now. That stuff would be different. But in terms of the experiences, they would be different because I'm older and I feel like I'm more mature than I was. But at the same time, what I've learned in all the movies I've made so far is that I can't really write a movie from experience while I'm experiencing it. So,
because you don't know what it means yet.
Exactly, yeah. There has to be some looking back on it. Like Maneater, as odd as it is, no, I never dated a cannibal. But I'll say, like, that relationship in Maneater, you know, it's based on a real relationship I had. The thing where she talks about how they have this conversation about the Holocaust, and she talks about, the cannibal talks about how she's interested in the Holocaust because she drew this picture just from memory, and she found out years later that it was a picture of, it was an exact replica of Auschwitz. That's a real conversation that I had in real life. So, that's an exaggerated
and that's how I met Molly.
No, that was before that.
That was one of the questions that I meant to ask last time, and I don't think that I did, how you and Molly ended up together.
You know, I mean, I do, as much as I want to talk about everything in my life, if you have me on Facebook, you'll see me write just about everything, but there's some things that I feel like I still need to be private about, especially, you know, for her. B, it's a long story.
Yeah.
I don't know that we have time for it. But I'll say, like, just to give you kind of a hint, because I did talk to her about this after we did the first interview, and she said it was all right with me revealing this here. Ladybeard is kind of a what if, you know? Ladybeard is something that could have happened, that we talked about happening, and it didn't. But when she and I were first friends, it looked like that was going to happen. So Ladybeard is kind of a, if we had traveled down that road, you know, what that would have been.
You're not saying that she's a cannibal.
We're on Ladybeard now.
Yeah.
No cannibals in Ladybeard.
Oh, I get Maneater and Ladybeard confused.
Yeah,
and lady.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I get it now.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
And Escribitionist, the second movie I did, about the blogger who reveals everything in his life, that was actually, we talked in the first interview about how I tried to make a version of that ended up falling apart.
Yeah.
That first version, I'm glad it fell apart because my thought was with that movie, I don't remember if I said this before, but my thought was this is about a guy who's revealing everything in his life, so the only way for me to do that is to reveal everything in my life. So the first version of that movie was extremely, like, much more, like, it was pretty much just, I should have just named the character David Smith and not Josh Thompson.
That's it.
But then the version that we actually made is much more fictionalized.
Yeah.
But yeah, that first version, I learned something in the process of making Escrevisionist about how you can't be completely, and what's weird, it gets very meta, is that I think kind of the lesson in Escrevisionist is that you can't reveal everything. A, because you have to take care of yourself. B, people don't necessarily want to hear everything. You know, you have to make things more interesting.
Yeah, you can't really go make a long form film where you just talk about going to get pizza sliders.
Exactly.
Unless it's like it's pizza sliders in the form that it's a pizza version of the hit Fox show Sliders, in which people go to different universes, and each universe pizzas are different.
That would be awesome.
Wouldn't that be great?
I would love to see that show.
But what is... I don't even remember where I was going. You said meta. Meta,
yeah. Meta, by far, I do play myself in that.
By far the most popular, and I would say maybe the most succinct distillation of David Smith as an artist that I've seen, is that you kind of hit all the notes that I think make you an interesting filmmaker. And you get in and you get out, and you made it in 72 hours.
Yeah, this is the movie we made for the 72-hour film competition in Charleston. You know, one of those contests are becoming more popular all around the country, in the world, really, where you get, you know, one day you get what, you know, some kind of clues or keywords, and you have to make a movie that involves those clues or keywords, and you have either 48 hours, and in this case 72 hours, to then write, direct, and edit the movie, get it all finished.
Yeah, there was one case that I think the first one of those they did in the 50s, Rob Reiner was involved, and he got the word walnut.
It all comes full circle.
It all comes full circle.
I was trying to explain for your audience.
Yeah.
In case they don't want to read the footnotes.
The footnotes?
What meta is. Now we can talk about that.
Yeah, so meta, the point of meta is I'm so self-obsessed that I am paralyzing myself from doing the thing that I'm obsessed with me doing.
I guess so.
Which is, I think...
Now that you put it that way...
Which is kind of, you know, looking at all of your films, there's an element of that in all of them. I think that's definitely what Maneater's about.
Yeah.
It's about someone who is so wanting to be in a relationship that they're not giving themselves permission to be in a relationship.
Exactly. I mean, that's my thought in it, is that guy in Maneater, to be in a relationship, you have to kind of... either know who you are, or even if you don't know who you are, you have to be someone. His desire to be in a relationship consumed him so much that that's all he was his desire to be in a relationship.
There are two types of people in bad relationships. There's the people that create their identity from the other person, and there's the person who has such a strong idea of what their identity is that they imprint and force that identity. And not even intentionally.
Right.
Sometimes they project that onto blank canvases.
Yeah.
And so you begin... And that is just an interesting distillation and with the whole Faust story going on. With meta, you just take it in the most literal way possible, which is I'm playing David Smith, who's a filmmaker, who's famous as a Huntington filmmaker. Do you ever do you ever say the phrase Huntington New Wave in meta?
I don't think so. I don't think we bring it up.
It felt almost implicit, though.
Yeah.
Is that it's sort of making fun with this weird expectation that you feel people have for you as an artist.
So. But the other interesting thing, I mean, it's still, like Lady Beard, meta was shot by Chase, so it does have the more kind of slick, beery, you know, I think it looks amazing.
No, my kids in the digital storytelling class love the scene where they shit into the Neververse.
Yeah, yeah.
That's always a popular one. Because even when you're doing something really cerebral,
yeah,
you have this amazing ability to add these moments of just what the fuck lowbrow humor,
yeah,
that makes no sense and it's like comes out of nowhere. Like the Hot Pockets joke.
Yeah. I mean, that's the stuff that I like, so I guess that's partly me.
Is it a way of sort of masking the portentousness or like the importance that you're feel to the ideas like, okay, I'm worried I'm going to be pretentious. If I buffer it with a poop joke, no one will take it serious, will think I'm being pretentious.
It might be, like, subconsciously, it might be a little more than subconscious. Well, no, it would be subconscious, because I'm not overtly doing that. I'm not writing and thinking, oh, I've been pretty serious for a while, better put in a weird joke here. It's more, in a way, it is, I like watching stuff like that. In another way, it's more like people might not agree with this or like this, but at least in my worldview, that's what the world is really like. I mean, something I've gone through tons of like serious moments, and then something like really stupid and silly and dumb and weird will happen. It would be better if I could think of a good example right now, but well, my work every day. I work, I don't know how much we got into it before, but I'm a caseworker for information referral at the library. I work with homeless. I work to try to direct homeless people to resources. It's a very serious, sometimes very dark and dreary job. But then these weird little things happen there, and that's real life, is that there's... It's dark and it's shitty, but then there's like this guy. Here's kind of an example. We're dealing with these people, you know, or I don't know, these people. That's a bad thing to say when you're talking about this, but you're dealing with people who are in these severe crisis situations, but then something will happen. Like this guy, I'm sitting there, and the way my office is, I'm sitting in front of the lobby of this day shelter, and this guy walks past me. Just stands there in the entryway and is looking at something out of view and just stands there and goes, "Fuck! RoboCop!" and walks out the door. And I go out because I think maybe RoboCop is on TV. TV is off. So, I don't know. Maybe that's bad that I think that's weird. Maybe.
Oh, that's no, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
No, that's the homeless, yeah, are the great example of something that is funny and deeply sad at the same time. And it's not funny because it's sad. That's right. Like, because that's another thing altogether, which I'm not sure I'm comfortable with. Mm-hmm. It's funny because it's genuinely, they're funny things that, you know, when people are doing funny things, it's okay for them to be funny.
Yeah.
But it did make me think. That made me think that we have to talk about Teresa.
Okay.
What is her? Teresa Howard.
Teresa Howard. Yeah.
Teresa Howard is, I think, the big acting discovery, yeah, of your films.
Yeah. And she's in she will audition for everything that's in Huntington, and I guess mostly Huntington. But you know, she's been in. She was in Johnny Boy. The movie, the feature that Brain Rap did. She's in Trace Around Your Heart as an extra. She's in Francesca Carli's movies. She will audition for just about everything. So
isn't she in Hatfields and McCoys?
I'm not sure if she was ended up being in that or not. Yeah. But she's in just about everyone's. I do try to give her bigger parts though, because she's, you know, she really wants to act.
Yeah, and she's, you know,
people love her, and she loves to do it.
She has that, a very, I'm trying to figure out the way to describe this, sort of like, she has sort of a Tim and Eric vibe going, but not in a way that makes you feel bad about watching it.
And that's a, you know, that's been discussed a lot about, you know, the Tim and Eric stuff. I mean, I don't think that they're being exploited, but that's a bigger discussion though that we could have. As far as Teresa, what I will say is, you know, yes, she's done some very silly things in the movies, and people love to see her be silly, and she loves to be silly, but I have grown to, you know, have a very strong friendship with Teresa. You know, it was her birthday last month. We had a birthday party for her. It was really nice. What I'd love to do, because I like getting people, as I said before, I mean, she wants to be an actor. So I love working with people who are not traditional actors. A goal that I have is I'd love to get Teresa in a movie and have it not be, like, funny, necessarily. Like, I mean, I don't do serious movies, but I would like to get Teresa in a part where I think that would be surprising for people. I think she would like it.
I think she could do it. I'd like to see her carry a movie.
I've thought about that, too.
I'd like to see her play, like, a Marge Lundegaard. Marge Gunderson, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Like Marge Gunderson from Fargo.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Something that's got a little bit of that, but it's kind of charismatic.
Yeah, like, all my movies are kind of through my point of view, so that's where I'm kind of growing as a writer, hopefully. It's difficult. I would find it difficult to write a movie, where the lead would be someone of her age, everything, but if I could do it, I'd love to do it.
What's amazing about you and your being in a profession that's social work is that that is so inside their head, to have something that completely pulls you out, and you are constantly in your career, constantly being reminded, okay, it's not about you.
Right, yeah.
It's got to be very liberating.
It is, and it's gotten that way more recently. Like, this is I forget if we said it on the podcast or if we said it off mic, but just in the last few months, I feel like I'm developing my ideas for the future are changing. Well, I did say it a little bit before that I'm getting to the point where I want to do more than just making movies. So yeah, that was it. But when I got into the line of work that I'm in, it was more of like, this is just a day job. This is how I pay the bills, and eventually I'm going to make movies full time. I am now getting to the point where I am wanting to do more. And it's because of that, because I get, on one hand, I do get outside my head. On the other hand, I don't know. I like empathizing with people. I feel like I do have a knack for doing it. I hope I do anyway. And one of the things that my job does teach me, especially since sometimes, you know, I'll be working with people for, I'll see them each week. I will start thinking with someone, you know, there's no way I can relate to this person. There's no way that this person just is completely different from me. And then something will happen where I'll come to the realize they'll say something and I'll realize, hey, I do know what they're feeling like. And that's pretty cool to me when I realize that I didn't think there was any room for empathy. And then I realize that there is. Like, that's kind of a cool moment.
My wife, for her birthday last year, did, she was turning a certain age, and so she did an act of kindness for every year she was alive. She had been alive, and I was just following along. I just kind of just went there to be along, but it's amazing the feeling that you get when you just put yourself out there.
Yeah.
And do that, and it's... And we got weirded out because they wanted this shelter that we sent stuff to, sent us a thank you card, and we're like, I wish they wouldn't do that.
Yeah, because you didn't do it for that. Yeah.
But the weird thing is, you have to be able to accept their gratefulness.
You do, yeah.
And that's the right. Weird part that people don't talk about acts of kindness. It's selfless means you still have to acknowledge people's thanks.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Because it's as much about them being grateful, although that's not a condition of you being good, because you can be good to a million people who are shit to you also, and it doesn't matter.
Right, yeah.
But you can't take them being grateful any more personally than you can take them being shitty to you.
Exactly, yeah.
So, you know, it's a weird dialectic there. Mm-hmm. I don't know where I'm going with this. You may be wide awake, but I'm...
Thought I needed to go ahead and break back in here. Give you a little bit of explanation of what happened right after this. I was using new equipment for this interview. I was using a Tascam DR08, which is a little DAT recorder. And as fate would happen, it ran out of memory right at this point in the interview. So we kept having this very, very momentous conversation after this, but you can't hear any of it because it wasn't recording. But I do want to take care of one last bit of business in this episode. As promised, I was going to feature the winner of my Oscar pool this year for my Oscar party. And for the fifth year in a row, surprise, surprise, that winner was me. So what I'm going to do now is feature the winner, me, Patrick Felton, from a recent set at Mojo's. So congratulations to Patrick Felton for winning.
Thank you very much.
Hope nobody minds. I've been recording tonight's sets so that I can relive them in extreme detail. Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, no. I did have this really cool bit about the Weather Channel, but tonight's fucked anyway, so let's talk about rape in the military. Oh, man. You're wondering, can Patrick make rape funny? Is Patrick going to try to make rape funny? I have a policy that I don't do any jokes about rape, but I'll sure make fun of rapists, because they suck. I showed this video in my class today. I teach a class on race, gender, and human identity at a historically black college that will remain nameless. But was recently in the news this week when someone fraudulently claimed that they had a master's degree in advertising from this university so that they could run a bowling alley. I'm not kidding, look this up. So I'm showing this movie in my class, and it's about rape in the military. I'm not telling you this because I have a joke about this. I'm telling you this because you need to know there's rape in the military. But I was sitting there thinking, watching this video with this class looking on in just utter terror, and I'm thinking to myself, how much it must suck to be the one guy with IBS right now. Because there's no fucking way that you can be a guy and suddenly get up and walk out during the middle of a movie about rape in the military. Especially if you're clean cut. It's just like, okay, nobody's looking right now if I go over there and just very subtly walk out here. And then you go out and there's like three women crying and the one says, why do you hate me? Because rape is horrible. Let's keep thinking about this. Are you guys enjoying me talking about rape yet? We need to get Johnny over here so that we can get Johnny's opinion on rape. Isn't that really what we're all thinking right now? What does Johnny think about rape?
Not so bad.
Me too, Johnny. Me too. To make this even more awkward, I was watching this on my Netflix account, and you know at the end of Netflix, it recommends you like 5 other movies that you might like, and if you like this movie about military date rape, you may also like ESPN's 30 for 30, Kobe, the inside story. And then randomly, first season of Downton Abbey. I don't know if there's any rape on the first season of Downton Abbey. My wife watches these weird things, and I can never tell because our Netflix queue is really bipolar between strange experimental documentaries and quirky romantic comedies that sometimes involve a lesbian. I'm not going to tell you which way each one goes. So we can go 2 ways now. We can keep talking about rape, or I could circle around to something else.
Rape.
We want to stay on rape. You know what sucks is this movie. Nobody got caught. Nobody went to prison. And yet, I am being surveyed by the MPAA for stealing movies over the internet. People are getting raped, and then I'm getting letters telling me that I pirated a song. That's fucked up, right?
I'm not the only one that thinks that's fucked up. You know what I wish? We're in South Charleston, which is like the Stasi of West Virginia police, right? I like, every time I see that there's a crime that takes place in South Charleston, I'm just so happy that the police have something to do, because they clearly have too much time on their hands. I just feel like they're sitting near their bat signal, which is shaped like Kate Carver, and they're just totally sitting there waiting for something to happen. You know what I wish would happen? I wish that there were like 3 bike cops that every time someone got raped would show up and beat the shit out of the guy and cut off his balls. That's not a joke. That's a sentiment, right? It's just, I mean, it's just fucked up, you know? And what it, thumbs down on that? You're not for rapist castration? Oh, yeah, turn it the other way now. Yeah, yeah. You showed your true colors already, man. You can leave. Yeah, if you got IBS, I promise I won't think you're a rapist.
Wow. That was momentous. So that's what it's like. Want to thank my guest today, David, for being so generous with his time. You can see his movie, Lady Beard, on Friday, April 12th, at the Keith Albee Theater as part of the Appalachian Film Festival. And you also get to see a Trace Around Your Heart, which was featured on a previous episode of this podcast by the folks from Brain Wrap. So make sure and go see both of those great films by dear friends of the podcast. As always, this episode was edited by me, Patrick Felton. It was recorded by me, Patrick Felton, thanks to the Tascam 08 and its amazing memory capabilities. Thanks, Tascam. And I did the interview. You want a transcript of today's episode, go back to the beginning of this episode, get a pen and paper, write real quickly, or you can feed it through Google Voice. They sometimes transcribe stuff. Today's episode is a production of the Charleston Podcast Project. My name is Patrick. I want to thank you all for listening. Make sure you go back to our website. Hey, I didn't mention this before. We have a domain now. What's that, you say? It's a domain. So if you go to thatconversation.me, so it's thatconversation.me, you'll get to our website. I'm on Twitter at thatconversatio. Facebook, hit us up, facebook.com/CHRpodcast. Thanks so much for listening, and I want to remind you, Charleston, that you can put a tutu on a hippopotamus, but that doesn't make it a ballerina. Thanks, Charleston.
Make your art.